Visit worldwildlife.org.
Now it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I inhale.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belville.
Welcome back, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Wednesday, December 16th, 2015. And we got just this hour and two more shows left for 2015. What an amazing year it's been. I've been on the road 100 days this year, put in 60,000 air miles. Pretty amazing. That's because legalization is breaking out everywhere, and it is my goal to spread the gospel of marijuana legalization. I will go to all of the hills and dales, from coast to coast. I will visit the people in the Midwest. I will visit the people in the South. Hallelujah! I will visit the people in the Rocky Mountains, from sea to shining sea, from Purple Mountains, Majesty. I will bring you the truth about marijuana legalization. And, some of the truth about marijuana legalization today is just rocking my world. You know me, I'm a data geek, I'm a stats hound, I love data. And the latest data from the Monitoring the Future study came out. That's the one that asks, for the past 40 years now, 8th, 10th, and 12th graders, their attitudes and use of drugs, alcohol, and marijuana. And, it goes back to 75 for the 12th graders, and I think it was around 91. Well, maybe it was the 80s on some of those drugs. But as time went on, they started asking more and more questions. They added in the 8th and 10th graders. So it's an amazing data set, just amazing data set with all the information you could possibly want about marijuana and drugs and the kids and how they're using them and so forth. So I was trying to pull up my stats here. Let me find my stat on the trips. Yes, 26 trips, 100 days, 60,000 miles to 32 cities in two countries. And over the past 3 years, it's been 85 trips, 334 days, 181,000 air miles, 182,000, let's say, and 49 cities in two countries. So, yeah, lots of legalization happening. But this data from the Monitoring the Future survey is so remarkable. And I've been using this survey for a long time because one of my favorite pieces of data in this survey comes from all the way going back to 1975 is when it asks 12th graders, if you wanted to go out and get some marijuana, right? You know, not whether they use it or not, right? But if you just wanted to go out and get some marijuana, how easy would that be? And they give them, you know, choices, right? It's like easy, fairly easy, not easy, impossible, whatever. I don't know exactly what the choices are, but the top two choices are easy and fairly easy. And so they've been asking 12th graders, high school seniors, we're talking kids that are 16, 17, 18 years old, if you wanted to get some weed, how easy would it be? And for the past 40 years, the answer from the kids has been between 81 and 92% throughout the entire War on Drugs era, 1975, you know, 4 years after Nixon declared war on drugs, or certain drugs, right? For that entire time, it had never been below, let me get the number here, 81%. Okay, so for the past 40 years, 81% to 90% of the kids, 12th graders, said it was easy or fairly easy to get a hold of marijuana. And this doesn't matter whether there's medical marijuana, when medical came in, when it, you know, when legalization happened, before medical, when Nancy Reagan was in the whole just say no thing. It didn't matter. Between 81 and 90% of high school seniors found it easy or fairly easy to get marijuana until today. Today, in the 2015 Monitoring the Future, for the first time ever in 40 years of tracking this data, fewer than 80% of high school seniors find it easy or fairly easy to get a hold of marijuana. It's down to 79.5%. Now, that's still up there. That's still saying 4 out of 5 teenagers can get a hold of weed. But for the first time ever, it's slightly, just a tad fewer than 4 out of 5. And this is a number that has been going down since 2000. It was 1998 when we hit the all-time high of 90.4%. 9 out of 10 high school seniors in 1998 said they could get a hold of some marijuana. And keep in mind, 1998, 1 year into the full, a full year into, 2 full years into California's medical marijuana and the passing of medical in a couple of states, 2 or 3 states, we were at 90.4%. Since then, that ease of access has gone down, 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 down. Almost every year, it's gone down. From 1998, it was 90.4%, 88% in 2000, 85% in 2005, 82% in 2010, and now in 2015, 79.5%. Marijuana legalization is working. It's making it harder for kids to get a hold of marijuana. We went from 9 out of 10 to 8 out of 10. In 15 years of legalization, we were able to get it out of the hands of one kid. Made it harder for one kid, 1 out of 10 kids, to get a hold of it. And it's going to get harder and harder as more states legalize.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
The son of a Polish immigrant who grew up in a Brooklyn tenement, he went to public schools, then college, where the work of his life began, fighting injustice and inequality, speaking truth to power. He moved to Vermont, won election and praise as one of America's best mayors. In Congress, he stood up for working families and for principle, opposing the Iraq War, supporting veterans. Now he's taking on Wall Street and a corrupt political system, funded by over 1 million contributions, tackling climate change to create clean energy jobs, fighting for living wages, equal pay, and tuition-free public colleges.
People are sick and tired of establishment politics, and they want real change.
Bernie Sanders, husband, father, grandfather, an honest leader, building a movement with you to give us a future to believe in.
I'm Bernie Sanders, and I approve this message.
The Russ Belville Show, where the truth about marijuana gets more than a minute to speak.
Great websites today need expert web design and development and need to be e-commerce ready and mobile friendly. But building a marketable and profitable website can be an uphill climb. Ready to make your new website or replace your existing website? Think Orange as the new way to get in the black. Orange Hill Development works with Fortune 500 companies and offer the same top quality development service at a fraction of what other providers charge. Brands like Absolut, Carlsberg, and Nestea trust Orange Hill Development. Find out why you should trust your website with Orange Hill. Contact Orange Hill for a consultation today at orangehilldevelopment.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Almost 13 after the hour. Digging deep into the Monitoring the Future 2015. So there was one thing I was worried about, though, as I got this data from Monitoring the Future about marijuana use, alcohol use, cigarette use, and drug use being at the lowest rates. Some of them are at the lowest rates ever recorded. Others are just down still. Even as we legalize, even as our opponents warned us, oh no, you legalize marijuana, the kids are going to think it's okay. The kids will think it's okay and they'll use more marijuana. Well, guess what? According to the latest Monitoring the Future, among high school seniors, those that think there is a risk in using marijuana regularly is at its lowest levels ever. 31.9%, 32%, less than a third of high school seniors think regular marijuana smoking is harmful. And yet, fewer of them are smoking marijuana. That's right. As we look at the monthly numbers for high school seniors smoking marijuana, it's down to 21.3%. That's a number that's, well, it was 21.4% in 2010. It was 19.8% in 2005. It was 21.6% in 2000. It hasn't really changed much. So even as high school seniors, more and more of them think that marijuana use, even regular use, isn't risky, isn't leading more of them to use it. Even among the daily users of marijuana, among high school seniors, 6%. Are using marijuana daily. In 2010, it was 6.1. 2005, it was 5%. 2000, it was 6%. So there's a little dip there in the middle of the 2000s, but really for the past 15 years, the average has been about 5.5 to 6%. So the kids aren't using marijuana anymore, even though they don't think of it as harmful. And fewer of them disapprove of it. Right now, among high school seniors for the 2015 numbers, 70.7% of them think that regular use of marijuana, they disapprove of that. You shouldn't smoke pot all the time. That's a 70% disapproval. That's way down. In 2010, it was 77% thought it was bad. In 2005, it was 82% that thought it was bad. So we have fewer and fewer high school seniors that think there's a risk in regular smoking. Fewer and fewer of them that disapprove of regular smoking. And yet, no more of them are really smoking. So I went through all that data and I started to have this little nagging fear because we've been doing this story on Robert Kimdichie, right? I started to have this fear that, wait a minute, what if these kids are switching from regular marijuana to synthetic marijuana? That wouldn't be good, right? Maybe there's fewer of them smoking regular pot because they know that's going to be drug tested for, and then they switch to Spice or K2 knowing that they won't get caught on a drug test. Well, guess what? I don't even have to tell you, do I? I don't even have to tell you. Spice use among the kids is down. Now, there's not a lot of data on this. Among the 12th graders, it only goes back to 2011. Among the 8th and 10th graders, it only goes back to 2012. So let's start with 2012. In 2012, 11.3% of high school seniors had tried synthetic marijuana that year. 11.3% had tried synthetic marijuana that year. What is it today? 2015, 5.2%. Less than half. It's gone down by more than half, I should say. The high school seniors using synthetic marijuana on an annual basis has declined by more than half. 10th graders, it was 8.8% in 2011. Guess what it is now? 4.3%. A decline of more than half. And then among the 8th graders, it was 4.4% in 2012. Today, down to 3.1%. A decline of a quarter. So, no, the kids aren't switching over to the synthetic pot either. Fewer kids are using drugs. Fewer kids are smoking pot. Fewer kids are drinking alcohol. Fewer kids are smoking cigarettes. Even though we've legalized medical marijuana in 23 states and DC, even though we've passed CBD laws in 15 or 16 states, I've lost count, even though we've got four states and DC that have legalized and another five states on tap, the kids are using drugs less, even as they are starting to recognize the truth about them, the truth about marijuana, that it's not as harmful as they've been told, and that regular use isn't necessarily dysfunctional. Even as they learn that truth, fewer of them are using drugs. It just goes to show you that everything predicted by our opponents that would happen if we legalized marijuana has failed to materialize. It's just not happening. And, you know, I almost feel for them. I almost feel bad for them that everything they say so far has been proven wrong. it's kind of sad for the opponents. I said the other day that being a pot prohibitionist these days has to feel a lot like being the manager of a Blockbuster video. Oh, remember the good old days? Yeah. But it couldn't have happened to a better set of people, the people that oppose marijuana prohibition. And coming up for the rest of the show, let me get a list of what we're doing here. Got some other topics. We'll also take your calls if you want to call in and talk about or ask some questions. The phone number is 971-533-7111. We got an update on the Freddie Gray case out of Baltimore, the young man who was killed by cops when they put him in the back of a van and gave him a shake-around ride where he broke his back, I think it was. We'll talk about that. We've also got a look at Star Wars coming up. The first showings are tomorrow. Everybody's excited as hell about that. And also, we've got some breaking news regarding the U.S. Supreme Court and the challenge to Colorado legalization.
Where'd you learn that, Cheech?
Drug school.
But right now it's 420 out here on the West Coast. The West Coast is the best coast. And we've got to get to a very important union-mandated safety briefing. Y'all should be safe out there as well. And if you can get together for your safety meeting, this would be the time to do it. We've got the strong silicone bong. We'll be back right after this.
Imagine life without taxes. Let New Era Certified Public Accountants, NewEraCPAs.com, handle your Canna Business 280E and tax strategy. Get your business prepared with New Era CPA's Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. NewEraCPAs.com, with years of experience in the industry, we are one of the nation's leading accounting firms for growers, dispensaries, and ancillary companies from Washington to California. NewEraCPAs.com.
You're listening to Radical Russ on The Russ Belville Show.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson, or Norman, and I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol.
There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
Marijuana is not addictive, but listening to the Russ Belville Show is.
Dr. Dauber, hurry! Its temperature is shooting past 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It's burning up.
I'm afraid for this little guy, it's just too late.
What caused the problem?
Only Dr. Dauber can maintain the perfect temperature for a smooth-tasting, slower burn. This standard vaporizer lost all of its health benefits, sending it up in smoke.
So you're telling me that most vapor pens burn so hot they produce smoke, not vapor?
Correct! Keep away from those standard vaporizer pens and turn to Dr. Dauber. Doctor's orders.
Less heat? More flavor.
All right, welcome back, everyone. 23 and a half after the hour here at Rolla J Studios in beautiful legal Potland, Oregon. Just checking out the Huffington Post, I saw this really cool thing. Airlines talking about creating a new seat, a new pair of seats on some airplanes called the Sky Deck, which would basically be a teardrop-shaped bubble sticking out of the top of the airplane. The jet, and then you could sit in that, and you got 360 degree view of the clouds and the scenery. I think that's pretty cool. I don't know how much that seat would cost, but it sounds pretty damn cool. We got some breaking news for you. This just in from the Marijuana Policy Project. The federal government urges the Supreme Court to not hear Nebraska and Oklahoma's lawsuit challenging Colorado's marijuana regulations. And I'll just read you the press release. In a brief filed Wednesday by the Solicitor General, the U.S. government urged the Supreme Court to dismiss the lawsuit filed by Nebraska and Oklahoma challenging Colorado's marijuana regulations. Nebraska and Oklahoma filed the lawsuit directly with the Supreme Court in December of 2014, arguing that the state's decision to regulate the cultivation and distribution of marijuana was, quote, placing stress on their criminal justice systems, end quote. In May, the court asked Solicitor General Donald Verrilli Jr. for his opinion on the lawsuit. According to the brief filed by Verrilli on Wednesday, quote, the motion for leave to file a bill of complaint should be denied because this is not an appropriate case for the exercise of this court's original jurisdiction. Entertaining the type of dispute at issue here, essentially that one state's laws make it more likely that third parties will violate federal and state law in another state, would represent a substantial and unwarranted expansion of this court's original jurisdiction. End quote. So, let's kind of unpack that. What are they talking about here? Well, if you remember from your civics, the Supreme Court has original jurisdiction. And what original jurisdiction means is that this is only a area where the Supreme Court can rule, right? Now, normally the Supreme Court is the highest appellate court, which just means that first, you got to take it to your local court, then you got to take it to a court of appeals, then you got to take it to circuit courts, blah, blah, blah. And eventually, you end up at the Supreme Court. But when we're talking about original jurisdiction, then the U.S. jurisdiction, the U.S. Supreme Court's jurisdiction as part of Article 3, are usually suits between states or territorial or water rights, right? Like, so if Colorado wants to sue California over water, then those kind of cases would go straight to the U.S. Supreme Court. But according to this Solicitor General, what he's saying here basically is that this isn't something that Article 3, Section 2 of the Constitution covers. This isn't a lawsuit between states. This isn't an interstate resource that they're suing over. They're suing because the way Colorado wants to regulate something makes it harder for Oklahoma or Nebraska to regulate something. Well, that according to the Solicitor General, that what he's arguing here is that that would be too expansive. To get involved in something, some dispute like that would open up a whole bunch of areas of dispute where states could start suing each other over gun laws, over abortion restrictions, over all sorts of things. So we'll see if this strategy works, because if the Supreme Court just refuses to hear the case, then the Cole memo and the acts being taken or allowed to happen by the Obama administration at this point would be allowed to continue to happen. If the Supreme Court agrees to hear this case, it could throw a monkey wrench into the entire scheme of legalization all across the nation. So this is very important, and getting it dismissed at this level could be the best option we've got. Because if this case were to be heard by the Supreme Court, there's no guarantee how this would turn out. There's a lot of folks on the Supreme Court who might not be so sanguine on the idea of violating the Controlled Substances Act and usurping the authority that the federal government should have over, at least in their previous declarations, I mean, or previous decisions. You got to look at things like the Raich decision, right, with medical marijuana, the Cannabis Buyers Club decision. There's a lot of federal, you know, Supreme Court decisions that recognize that the federal government still has the right to dictate to the states what is allowed as far as marijuana legalization. If this case goes to the Supreme Court, they have to give, you know, deference to those precedents that were set in those previous cases, and I don't know that it would turn out good for us. So let's just hope this thing gets rejected. That would probably be the best option that we could hope for. All right. Also in breaking news, and we're a little off the warpath on this one, but it's somewhat related, and it has to do with the case of Freddie Gray. As you may know, Freddie Gray was the young man in Baltimore, African-American man, who was arrested, and then the cops, to punish him, took him on a rough ride, which is basically where they get you all handcuffed. They put you in the back of the police van, and then they take a wild ride around the city, going around corners fast and taking big bumps and starting and stopping real quick. So you slam around the inside of that van and get injured. Turned out Freddie Gray broke his back. And Freddie Gray died. Oh, I'm sorry, he didn't break his back, broke his neck. Yes, broke his neck while in police custody. Well, today, a judge has declared a mistrial in the case of Baltimore police officer William Porter because jurors say they are deadlocked. The jury can't come to a unanimous decision. Porter was one of the six officers charged with the death of Freddie Gray, and this is a major setback because this officer, Porter, was the one that they had the most on. And then they were going to use this conviction of Porter to go forward with the trial for the other five officers that were involved in a little lesser degree. So the judge told the prosecution and defense to appear to set a new trial date. And it makes you wonder what's going on. And and part of this, I think, has to do with how the instructions get read to the jury that tell them how they have to decide the law. And it's frustrating as hell, isn't it? Everything we know about this case is clearly a case. I mean, they've got the cell phone video where they're dragging him into the van. Everything about this case points to willful neglect and willful abuse of a prisoner in custody, a helpless prisoner in custody. And we get a deadlocked jury? How many more times is this going to happen? How many more times are homicidal cops going to walk in this country before people start taking, as one GOP candidate once said, Second Amendment remedies to these problems. I don't want to see this, but how long is it going to be? How long is it going to be before we start hearing of cops getting openly shot at? And then that, of course, will just invite a stronger response, more lockdown, more militarization. When they chant no justice, no peace, this is the kind of stuff they're talking about. Now, I don't know what is going on with this jury. I can't possibly know. Let's hope they get another trial put together. And we start to see some justice for these people. We start to see some justice for the people who are abused, who are killed by police, who we get them on video killing us and still can't put them away, still can't punish them. You know, they say there's only that they always like to dismiss this as it's only a few bad apples. It's a renegade cop. It's a rogue cop. It's whatever. No, it's a system. It's a system that keeps the good cops from turning in guys like this. Because those good cops end up getting killed themselves. The whole barrel is rotten, not just a few bad apples here. And this can only go on for so long before it leads to riots, before it leads to chaos. If the people can't trust that the justice system works for us, that the police work for us, it's only a matter of time before we start to see even more chaos and revolt and riot and anger and frustration. I know in my heart that ending the war on drugs will have a lot to do with fixing some of this. I would argue you can't start to fix any of this until you get rid of the war on drugs. It's the war on drugs that has led the police, has incentivized the police to go after our own citizens and to think of them as the enemy, the other, something that needs to be controlled and patrolled and inspected and arrested and searched and seized. It can't not happen given the incentives that we've set up in this system. It's got to start with some of these cops doing the perp walk and doing some real time. Similarly, on the white-collar side of things, it needs to happen with some of these Wall Street crooks doing the perp walk and doing some hard time. And unfortunately, this type of attitude, this type of letting him skate, comes down from the top. It started when President Obama refused to hold anyone from the Bush administration responsible for the crimes they had committed. Torture. It's no surprise that the country that countenances torture allows Freddie Gray to die at the hands of police in the back of a van. It's no surprise. You reap what you shall sow. You shall reap what you sow, however that goes. And we're starting to reap it. And ironically, for supposedly a Christian nation, there's got to be some major changes, and one of those major changes is we need to fix our justice system. We need to see that those who commit crimes, no matter how powerful, no matter how connected, no matter how rich, that those people do time, that they are punished. Because without that, we're just going to descend into chaos. We're just going to descend into lawlessness. And I fear for my country. I fear for those considerations. I can see how quickly the rise of Donald Trump itself ought to be the canary in the coal mine for a lot of us here. Seeing that there's that many people so fearful and angry and full of hate and paranoia. God, they say smoking weed makes you paranoid? No, no. I think smoking weed's about the only way you can deal with this country anymore. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll have our final segment of the day. And make sure you stay tuned for later, top of the hour, Stoner Jesus will be joining us, blessing us with smoky goodness. You're listening to CannabisRadio.com. I'm Radical Russ, everywhere. See you in a sec.
the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
The Fingerboard Extension has fretted instruments to enhance your creativity. It has new and used guitars and banjos from beginning to high class. The Fingerboard Extension has National Resophonic, Husson Dalton, Larrabee, Heritage and Recording King guitars, and Mike Ramsey, Wildwood, Gold Tone and Recording King banjos. The Fingerboard Extension also has drum stuff, used gear and parts. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis, Oregon at 120 Northwest 2nd, or check out the inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com and reverb.com.
You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com, where we don't change our mind on decriminalization during an election year.
You know Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, we've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs, we've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com and follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter.
If you're an adult who enjoys a good beer, there's a similar product you might want to know about. One without all the calories and serious health problems. Less toxic so it doesn't cause hangovers or overdose deaths, and it's not linked to violence or reckless behavior. Marijuana. Less harmful than alcohol. And time to treat it that way. For more information, visit marijuanaissafer.org.
The Russ Belville Show. We're as much like Cheech and Chong as ordinary Americans are like the Three Stooges.
Hey, Mo!
Gondrepreneur.com, your guide to the cannabis business world. Gondrepreneur.com is a comprehensive resource for cannabis professionals and entrepreneurs. Download the Gondrepreneur app on your smartphone or tablet to catch up on cannabis industry news, scroll through our daily job listings, and learn about successful cannabis companies, executives, and investors. Gondrepreneur.com, helping gondrepreneurs grow.
Oh, that's interesting. Welcome back, everyone. That's the news music, but it's not the news. Sometimes that kind of stuff happens here. Get all that worked out. Big thanks to Christopher Ingraham at the Washington Post Wonk blog. His piece on the Monitoring the Future study is out. It's entitled, "The Case for Marijuana Legalization Just Got Stronger." And he makes all the points that I've been making. He's got a quote here from the National Institute of Drug Abuse Director, Dr. Nora Volkoff, who says, quote, "We are heartened to see that most illicit drug use is not increasing, non-medical use of prescription opioids is decreasing, and there is improvement in alcohol and cigarette use rates," end quote. It's great when you get to hear the prohibitionists have to say things like that. And it's always interesting to me how the elephant in the room they'll never say is that marijuana was legalized, right? You got, anytime they see something bad happen, right? Like if they get, more people have marijuana in their systems in fatality crash rates, right? You know, we see more, oh my God, see, we legalized marijuana, something terrible happened, right? They're always really quick to add that whole causal effect when it comes to something bad happening. But when something good happens like this, the fewest kids ever are smoking cigarettes. The fewest kids ever are drinking alcohol. The fewest kids ever are using synthetic marijuana. And the use of marijuana by kids is lower or the same after all these states have legalized. No mention. Don't hear much from them on that. No causality whatsoever, right? You got guys like Andy Harris. He's the representative from Maryland. He's the one who basically is keeping Washington, D.C. from being able to move forward with pot shops, right? At a speech at the Heritage Foundation, Christopher Ingraham writes, he said, "Relaxing marijuana laws clearly leads to more teenage drug use. It should be intuitively obvious to everyone that if you legalize marijuana for adults, more children will use marijuana because the message that it's dangerous will be blunted." pardon the pun. And this data shows completely the opposite. Kids did get the message that it's the message that it's dangerous will be blunted. Right. See, here's the thing. When you're asking kids about how dangerous they think marijuana is, and you see those numbers have gone down, you have to understand that the kids back in the day, back when I was in high school, were told that smoking even one marijuana cigarette would cause the same level of brain damage as being exposed to a nuclear explosion. Seriously, Ronald Reagan said that when I was in high school, that the damage from one marijuana cigarette would be equal to being on Bikini Island during an A-bomb blast. Nuclear radiation, marijuana cigarette, about the same. We were the generation that had to see the fried egg. You know, this is your brain. This is drugs. This is your brain on drugs. Any questions? Yeah, can I get some hash with that? We had to grow up with that. So if you go from telling the kids that marijuana is this deadly, dangerous drug that'll ruin your brain and lead straight to heroin use, and then you measure that against a generation of kids who today, a college freshman, has lived his entire life or her entire life understanding there's such a thing as medical marijuana. Well, of course they think it's less harmful now. Of course their perception of risk has declined because it's coming down from the ludicrous scare level it has been to a realistic, scientifically factual level that it is getting to today. Of course they think it's less harmful. But that doesn't mean that they think it's something good to do. We've been saying for the past, 6 years now, marijuana is safer than alcohol. Marijuana is safer than alcohol. And yet, fewer kids are using both marijuana and alcohol. Now, more adults are smoking pot. More adults are smoking pot, but if we're legalizing that, shouldn't they be? Or at least shouldn't they be admitting it now? These are some of the best data, and what a great Christmas present for us in the marijuana movement. Check out Christopher Ingraham's post in the Washington Post. It's at the Wonk blog. You should be able to find that. And you can follow him at underscore C Ingraham. That's at underscore C-I-N-G-R-A-H-A-M. One of the best writers out there on these issues for the drug war, and he's in the mainstream media, so he gives us a lot of cred. Great work, Chris. Also in the news, of course, Star Wars starts tomorrow. There's some midnight showings. Across the street from me at the local neighborhood theater, there's a 7 o'clock showing tomorrow. Unfortunately, I will be, well, not unfortunately, I'm glad to be there. I will be at the Marijuana Business Association December meetup here in Portland. So we'll be doing a live show from that December meetup, and I'll be hosting there, or not hosting, but streaming from there. We'll talk to all sorts of folks, get some interviews. So it'll be an extended show tomorrow. We'll have our regular two-hour show, plus we'll have about an hour or so from the MJBA meetup. Then I've got my Portland Normal board meeting to get to, and that's after having to do a teeth cleaning appointment at like 7 in the morning tomorrow, so it's going to be a long day. But anyway, Star Wars comes out tomorrow. Lots of folks excited about it. You know, I'm excited about it and hoping it just doesn't suck. I think there's a lot of us out there that just hope it doesn't suck. Because, you know, when that first sequel trilogy came out, you know, parts 1 through 3, it kind of sucked. You know, Jar Jar Binks and all that, it really sucked. And I'm a huge nerd, although I'm much more of a Star Trek guy than a Star Wars guy, but looking forward to this, and let's just hope that it doesn't suck. Also, keep in mind, we've got Stoner Jesus coming up at the top of the hour, and I have got the marijuana legalization initiatives all hyperlinked and reformatted to make them much easier to read. I've also attached my little sticky notes, electronic sticky notes, on all of these initiatives, and you can find them all now at rad-r.us, rad-r.us, slash MJ2015. That'll take you out to Scribd. That's MJ2015. It'll take you out to Scribd, and there'll be four copies out there. The fifth one, I'll get Maine up later tomorrow. And those are PDFs. That's my Christmas present to you. These fully marked up Acrobat PDF files of the Marijuana Legalization Initiative. So check those out, and you can get all the details you could possibly want on marijuana legalization in 2015. Or 2016, I should say. 2016. Also keep in mind that Ohio might make the ballot for 2016. Ian James swore he would come back and put together another initiative for 2016. And there's an outside shot that Vermont and Rhode Island may legalize marijuana through their legislatures. Other legislators are introducing bills. We heard of one from Kentucky, and looking at that Kentucky bill looks really nice, but I don't know that there's really good chance the Kentucky legislature is going to move forward. We've also got the possibility of medical marijuana starting again in Florida for 2016, and the folks in Missouri, Show Me Cannabis, they're working on a medical marijuana initiative that could get some traction. We'll keep you posted on all that, but I know if I'm a betting man, I say there's five states that make the ballot for 2016. California, Arizona, Nevada, Maine, and Massachusetts. That's for sure. Let's not forget Michigan. Michigan's got some groups out there that are fighting to make the ballot. They're an outside shot. They make it as well. So come 2016, we could have the greatest marijuana legalization night ever, and we'll be covering it here for you on CannabisRadio.com. We'll have our marijuana election night coverage live from one of those states that's legalizing. I'm not sure where I'll be. We're trying to put together a Legalize America tour, so I'll keep you posted on that too. I might be just hitting the road, and we'll see you wherever we go. Also, quick breakdown here too that don't want to forget about this. When it comes to the marijuana news, we've got a vote here. We've got a few votes coming out, local votes that you should know about. Palm Beach County in Florida voted for decriminalization so that their officers can write a $100 ticket rather than taking you into jail. There is Franklin County in Washington has voted 2-1 to ban marijuana businesses. They've had 6-month moratoriums for years, but now they're finally banning marijuana businesses in Franklin County, Washington. We've got Mount Angel will be voting on that. That's Mount Angel in Colorado. There we go. Voting on whether or not to allow marijuana businesses. And also, where's the other state here? There was another one. Oh, yes. Unincorporated Pierce County will be voting on whether or not to ban. That's in Washington State as well. This is something we're going to have to deal with, and it's frustrating to a lot of people that as we move forward with marijuana legalization, these initiatives come forward with strong local control, where localities can decide to ban marijuana businesses. And we have to understand that localities have this power for alcohol, too, in almost every circumstance. So we kind of put ourselves in that frame when we kept saying, you know, treat marijuana like alcohol, regulate marijuana like alcohol. Marijuana is safer than alcohol. So we keep putting ourselves in an alcohol frame. So if a city or town or a county has the power to regulate or even ban alcohol, should it not also have that power to regulate or ban marijuana? On a commercial level, not talking about being able to have it in your home or smoke it, but on a commercial level, whether they can ban pot shops or commercial grows or commercial processors or whatever, we're going to have to accept that localities are going to want that local control because they have that same power over alcohol. And this is part of that art of compromise. This is some marijuana supporters just don't understand that politics is the art of the possible. And in a lot of cases, you have to make compromises, and they might not always be compromises you like. I don't like the idea that over 50% of the landmass in my home state has banned pot shops. I go east of the Dalles, there's no place for me to buy weed. And that sucks. It sucks that a person in Ontario, Oregon, is closer to legal weed in Washington state than they are in their own state. But we're going to have to accept it. These local options are something that we're just not going to get past. Now, part of why I think this freaks people out is because they're not aware that this local option exists for alcohol because so few places use it. So few places have these local bans on alcohol. And part of the reason is because it's just not economical. People like to drink, and you lose restaurant business, you lose, you know, shopping business and so forth if your city or county bans alcohol. That's what's going to happen with marijuana, folks. Once we get this legalized, and once the more liberal cities are raking in money hand over fist, and once these smaller places, these towns and cities start to recognize that, hey, we're losing residents, we're losing workers, we're losing tax revenue because people want to live where pot's legal, that's going to eventually have the effect of removing these bans. They're going to want a slice of the pie. And that's why when these initiatives come up that have local taxes attached, you know, a locality can add a tax, I'm not against that. I mean, I'm against it being too much. But like here in Oregon, our localities are going to be able to add up to a 3% tax. In Massachusetts, their localities are going to be able to add up to a 2% tax. That becomes the honey. That's the honey to lure in these localities, these cash-strapped little towns, to start thinking, well, wait a minute, man. Maybe if we allowed some pot shops, we'd get some tax revenue. We'd make some money. We'd bring in some tourists, get some shopping. Maybe that's a good idea. Politics is the art of the possible, people, and we are making it possible to legalize marijuana, but only if we recognize that compromises have to be made and don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. It's good that we're legalizing. Legalization always trumps prohibition. We got to call it a day. Thanks for joining us. Stoner Jesus is up at the top of the hour, so stay tuned here on CannabisRadio.com. For everyone here at Rolla J Studios in beautiful legal Potland, Oregon, I'm Radical Russ. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Arguing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It is even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more in this edition of Drug War Data Mining. Today in the Drug War Data Mines, we're taking a look at some information unearthed by the Wall Street Journal, taking a look at the FBI's records on arrests and incarceration in this country. And over the past 20 years, authorities have made a shocking quarter billion arrests over the past two decades, quarter billion. And of those quarter billion arrests, it has led to the FBI having 77.7 million individuals in its master criminal database. 77.7 million individuals in its master criminal database. That's about 30% of adult individuals. About one out of three American adults are listed in a criminal database. And that database grows by 10 to 12,000 names each day.
And this is absolutely legal. This doesn't speak to how Rand Paul called out Chris Christie last night in the Republican debate about massive surveillance of Americans. That's on top of the fact that just through the use of our criminal justice system, one out of three American adults, almost, is in the federal records of criminals. Now, spending on law enforcement by states and local governments hit $212 billion in 2011. That's including judicial, police, and corrections costs. That's estimates from the U.S. Census. Adjust those figures for inflation, and they're up from $128 billion in 1992. And what a lot of people aren't understanding in these figures is it's not just people who are arrested and then convicted, who then have criminal records that are easily accessible for any employer or potential landlord. But we're also talking about people who were just arrested and then never convicted, people who are innocent until proven guilty. And their records can be found, and the mere fact of them having an arrest record can be found and used to discriminate against them in employment, housing, education, and so forth. This has such an effect on citizens. There is a survey, National Survey of Youth, checking up till age 25. This is the University of South Carolina, almost 9,000 people born in 1980 to 1984. By age 25, 21% of those who had never been arrested owned a home. But that number was 15% if you were arrested and 10% if you were convicted. As far as the median income, $25,000 if you were never arrested. But if you were arrested, and again, arrested but not convicted, still innocent, just arrested, $23,000. If you've been convicted, median income is $20,000. People that had never been arrested, only 13% were below the poverty line at age 25. If they'd been arrested, 21%, one out of five below the poverty line. If they'd been convicted, one out of four, 26%. So these arrests, even without convictions, have detrimental effects on people's lives. We've seen the number of police officers swell by more than 100,000 from 531,000 in 1991 to 646,000. As of 2011, the most recent year of data. And as we look at that data, of course, it's even worse. If-